Hello everyone, and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness with Ant-Man. And I'm delighted to announce publicly, for the first time, I should say, my new co-host, Steve.
Hello.
It's great to have you on board. Mike has decided to move on to different things. He's working on different projects. One of which is a science project, which he's spoken to me a bit about, and I know is really, really interesting. And I hope in the future he should come into the public realm, because there's a lot of good stuff in there. And just to say, it's been really delightful working with Mike on 15 episodes that we've got out now. And we've got ourselves a little bit of a following, which is really good. So I'm really grateful for the input. And now I'll hand you over to my new co-host, Steve, and he will just give you a little bit of a background about himself.
Thank you very much, Ant-Man.
Thank you.
My name's Steve. I've been interested in a lot of technologies and science for quite a number of years. I've played with computers for far too many years, over 30 of them.
Quite a while.
Yeah, a fair bit of knowledge there, yeah, I hope, anyway. I've always had an interest in the technology side of things, and really, there's a large part of where I had some real changes in my, I guess, belief structure to a large
degree. I like that phrase, yeah.
And part of it was down to a book I read that gave an alternative history to the UK, which was an eye-opener to have gone through all my schooling, being told a certain way of believing certain things, and then to have something question it, it made me start to question a lot of other things.
And what was that book then, Steve?
It's called The Holy Kingdom. And I think, you know, it's one of those things that definitely people should go and look up and just read for themselves. It will make you think a little bit differently about a number of things you've been taught. And it did for me. And that followed on to then questioning a lot of other things, questioning what sources of news that we get and how we get it, and how things are being done to us.
So that was one major epiphany.
It's probably the biggest one, yes.
Because, of course, in the online community, a lot of the real history comes under the category of revisionist history, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yeah. And there's a lot of that if you actually look in more detail, you suddenly find that there's a lot to back it up. But we're not told to look in detail.
No. I mean, the kind of history that we get, even, you know, in the mainstream, from the supposed beginning of human species on this planet, is incredibly and stupidly myopic,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, and it's always written from the viewpoint of one particular people.
Normally the victors, the West, in a war situation.
The vast majority of our English history is based on the Roman history of the time, and they're not going to write bad things about themselves, are they?
No, absolutely not.
So yeah, that's a lot of the formative that I had. Obviously, I'm relatively nervous about doing this. I'm aware of the following that Discerning Consciousness has, and the good work that Mike's done. So I know that it's a hard act to follow. I just hope that I can, in some way, live
Thank
up to it.
Thank you for your kind words, yeah. And I'll just add again how grateful I am personally to Mike to helping me set Discerning Consciousness up and get the following that we have. And again, I wish him well with his projects that he's working on. And hopefully we'll see him on, you know, hear him as a guest on the show in the future.
Yeah, I think that would be potentially very interesting.
That would be, to get his input, that would be amazing. So I think we'll plough straight on with the subject for today, which is a real corker. I think a good one to start, Steve, on, is the cashless society.
Which is where we're all going.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Some might argue that we're already there, and it's just what we're looking at now is a bit of a sort of a tidying up exercise.
Yeah, there's an awful lot that they've already put in place, or that is already in place. You can argue as to who's put it in place, but there's a lot that is in place. There's a lot that's there, and it's the reasoning for it. That's the biggest concern that I see. It will be, as with everything, it will be sold on a, this is for your safety, this is for your security, this is to make it better for you.
And also, of course, This will make it cheaper for
yes.
you.
Yes. Oh, that's always a good sell.
That's the easy sell. So I think if we a good way to start is just to consider at the moment. Obviously, we've had the development of smartphones in recent years. Now, this is a big part of the whole propagandizing, the whole conditioning people towards the idea of just accepting a cashless society. So I wonder if you could speak just on some things in terms of the smartphone as an alternative payment method.
Yeah, so if you think, I guess, really with smartphones, the precursor to it was with the credit cards that had the contactless.
Mm.
That you could do for small payments.
Mm.
And then that's followed on now with smartphones. You've got Apple Pay, you've got Google Pay, you've even got Samsung who are doing their own as well.
Mm.
But they're all doing it, and they're all doing it because it's convenient.
Yeah.
And it's secure and safe.
Apparently.
That's their sell line. That's how they'll try and get you to do it.
Mm.
If you were to look at certain parts of it, a lot of this is done through near-field communication systems.
Okay, and what does that mean, Steve?
It's a short range. You could effectively say it's a specialised Bluetooth.
Right.
But it's very short range. The difference with near-field communication is it's passive. So it's like RFID chips. You don't need to power it necessarily.
Right.
You can switch it on and off.
Yeah.
But ultimately, yeah, you can effectively talk to something else with minimal power requirements, but it's over a very short range.
Right.
We're talking about a few feet, not meters or anything bigger than that.
Mm.
And I do tend to mix measurements.
I'll give you that license, only on the first one.
If you look at how they're doing it, they're selling it through the fact that you can have security because of fingerprint scanning.
Mm.
Some of them are using pins as well.
Is that part? I believe that's part of the Google Play, isn't it? Google Pay.
Yes, it's not. Again, it's something that you would say that it's not necessarily a requirement, but it's what they've built into their systems. Okay. Same as with the Apple Pay.
Yeah.
That's looking at confirming it through a fingerprint scan in most cases.
Mm.
And that means that all your fingerprints are online.
Mm.
If you look at some of the newer developments, they're talking about iris scanning
as that's part the of next security. Development,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And that's already out there. That's out there now.
I think the reason why they're going that angle, Steve, is within schools they've been using the fingerprinting for children when they have their lunch.
Yes.
And rather than having, say, a payment card or something, they just use the finger. You said that sounds wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah, use the fingerprint.
Use the fingerprint, yes, get that right, Ant-Man. Well, I think that still people are uncomfortable with that because of the connotations of the criminal class.
Yes.
Which makes me feel uncomfortable. If I had children, I'm damn sure that my child would not be partaking in that lunch scheme. So that's why I think you were saying they'll move towards the iris.
Yeah, and you look at it, there's the whole part of this contactless payment is for your convenience and security.
Mm.
But what it means is it means you're not using cash.
Mm.
And there must be a reason why they want us away from cash.
Mm.
And it comes down to the only...
But they're not going to tell us the real reason.
No. And yeah, they definitely won't give us everything that we want in the way of reasons why. So what are you left with? You're left with making certain assumptions based on everything else that goes on.
Mm. I've just got a very quick anecdote in terms of the contactless card. Recently, I won't name the bank, of course, but my debit card, the strip became attached, so it was broken, essentially.
Yeah.
I couldn't withdraw cash. So I went into my bank, requested a new card. I specifically said, I want a normal debit card, not a contactless one. And what did they do? They sent me a contactless one.
Because
and I had to go back and order. And the next time they sent me a proper one, you know, that wasn't a contactless one. But then I had the whole spiel of, well, why don't you want one, sir? You know, it's more convenient. And I said, well, friends have told me of instances where they're being charged for things they haven't brought because it's just gone off in their wallet or their purse.
Yes.
And they said, well, don't worry about that because, well, you know, if that happens, we'll pay up to £30, you know, to cover the costs. It's like, so they already know that actually, technologically speaking, it's not legit.
It's an imperfect system.
It's an imperfect system, yeah.
And that's it's understandable because of the technology that's being used.
Mm.
And it's no different to the near-field communication side of it. Should be short enough range that it's not going to trigger anything else. But that's no different to Bluetooth. Bluetooth's been proven to work over far greater ranges than anybody thought possible in the right conditions. So in the right conditions, it's a, it is a technological failure that they accept. So there must be a reason that they're prepared to put that funding for the failures. So what's it worth to them? Why are they doing
that's
it?
That's a very good point.
And the only reason that it can be is that it gives them absolute monitoring of everything.
Total control, which is their end game. I think now, Steve, it would be interesting to move things on a little bit and look at... So we've got the idea of the smartphone as a payment method and the way in which this is conditioning people towards just accepting a cashless society as a natural progression, you know. There's other things part of that conditioning process. So we have things like payment cards. So the Oyster card, which I believe was introduced around about 2003.
That sounds about right, yeah.
And then you've got things like payment cards when people visit tourist sites or leisure centres or things like that. So, and bans as well.
Yeah, there's plenty of leisure sites where they do bans for things. There's some holiday places where you'll get a band and that does your door, it does lockers, you can put money on it. So again, it's just this selling you this, you don't need cash. You don't need cash. What do you need cash for? It's not a requirement anymore. There's even situations, of there's a report recently about the homeless in Sweden. And some of them have actually been given card readers because nobody can give them cash. So they give them card readers to be able to take payments from them.
That conjures up quite an image in your head. Some homeless person sat there on the street.
And effectively what they have is a card built into the card reader. So people can put their cards into that card reader, give them some money, and they can then take that to go and pay for things. Again, it's these are people that are effectively unbanked. They're outside of the banking system. And yet they've already thought of ways to get them into
that,
it.
That to me is, because one of the things that I always thought that may preclude them from making the final move to introducing the cashless society is, well, how are they going to do all their dodgy deals? You know, all the mobsters and black ops. Well, they just give them one of these bloody card readers.
Yeah, that's one way. I mean, the other one that's talked about, and again, with many things, there's double-edged swords to it all. Bitcoin. Bitcoin is effectively a virtual currency. It doesn't really exist anywhere.
I've heard a lot about that, so it'd be interesting for our listeners and myself actually to hear more about that.
So effectively what Bitcoin is exactly that. It's a virtual currency. You can argue that all currency is virtual.
Well, yeah.
We only have to go down the road of quantitative easing to work out that all...
Billions created at a keystroke.
That's it, yeah. We don't really have it, but here you go.
Yeah.
But Bitcoin is... absolutely, genuinely, just a virtual money. That's all it is. It exists inside the computer or inside a number of computers, and that's the only place it exists. Now, you can buy bitcoins with real, as you call it, real funds from a bank. So there are places where you can buy the bitcoins. The advantages to bitcoins are there's no central banks involved in transferring them. It's done literally peer-to-peer.
So it's very democratic in that sense.
Yes. And actually the effective record, the ledger of it, that's in something called a blockchain. There's lots of words that they use that are...
Okay. So what does that mean, blockchain?
And
that's very science geeky.
It does, and that's something that happens a lot to try and confuse other people. Generally, it's just a ledger. It's an electronic ledger, but it's an encrypted electronic ledger. So, and it's, there are a number of copies of that ledger that are in a distributed network, and you can join into that network so you can be a part of it as well. There's not a restriction on that. So anybody can effectively be part of that system, and anytime there's a new transaction, that's recorded, and a new blockchain effectively, or a new part of the blockchain, is written, and it records what's happened, but it uses all the previous blockchain components, or a list of them as such, to build the new blockchain.
Right.
So therefore, you keep a record of everything that's happened. You keep this electronic ledger in place. And every time a new transaction happens, another one gets written. And that way, it's a quite a secure way of doing it. The encryption is very good, very difficult, and it ensures that your transaction is recorded. It's very difficult to break into and find out what the transaction was, though, unless you have the right keys.
Right.
And those encryption keys are the critical part. And actually, the keys to that encryption will be you and the other person.
Right, okay.
So you can both see what's happened, but yes, technically other people can, but it takes a while.
So when do you think, I know Bitcoin is very popular within the online alternative community, a lot of researchers are extolling its virtues, but when do you see it reaching a point whereby, you know, the big retailers be using it?
And that comes down to when there's enough people. If there's enough people have it and demand it, there are places where you can actually use Bitcoin, but they're limited. I think there's somewhere around 40,000 online places that you can. There are even in Canada, apparently, there's a effectively a cash machine where you can log in to your Bitcoin account and you can draw out real cash.
Because that would appeal to me.
Yes.
Yeah, trying to keep the cash in circulation. Yeah.
The advantages to Bitcoins are that you do end up with this personal transfer. And the charges for it, in a lot of cases, are very, very low. Typical banks are sort of 2-5% for any transfer, and that effectively gets funded by all the bank charges, all the interest that you pay. That all goes for those internal transfers that they do. So when you pay via your credit or debit card, there is a cost that the actual the shopkeeper, whatever, has to pay, but there's also a transfer cost internally within the banks. And so that all gets funded. With Bitcoin, there's minimal charges. It's 0-2% charge.
So is there any evidence from your research you've done, Steve, to suggest that the major banks are trying to co-opt Bitcoin?
There's a lot of talk of it trying to become more regulated because, and again, what they're saying is that, well, because it's unregulated, it's being used for money laundering, it's being used by the black market. That, again, how true that is,
As soon as I hear that those words used, I know they're trying to set something up.
Yes. So it just feels like they're trying to make it a system that they then have some control over. The difficulty is the encryption method that's been chosen. The way that this ledger is held makes it very difficult for them to try and grab anything to it. To some degree, it's like the internet. As much as the internet is brilliant for them because they can see so much of what's going on.
It's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah, and Bitcoin is exactly the same. It's something that they really want to control, but they can't control easily. But then again, to put money into Bitcoin, you still have to have funds from a regular bank. So they still want to
It's still very much in the system, isn't it? It's not trying to do what I know some of these local currencies like the Totnes pound, and there are numerous other examples in the UK are trying to do, where they're trying to sort of almost create, you know, an alternative system, albeit on a small scale, aren't they?
Absolutely. And unless you can actually go out for regular employment and that regular employer pays you in Bitcoins, it's not going to fully supplant anything that we've currently got. It's interesting. It's certainly where we're going. I mean, it's a virtual currency which really you could trace back further to, in some cases, some in-game currencies where people were doing real tasks for people for in-game currencies in certain games.
Second Life.
Yeah, things like that. Yeah, so people were genuinely doing things and for other people and getting in-game currency based upon
commercial transactions.
Bitcoin is just a smarter, cleverer way, with a more secure way of actually storing what's going on. To a large degree, it's more secure than your regular banks anyway, because of the way it's done.
So, yeah, that was very interesting. Thank you for that, Steve. So to bring it back to the movement towards a cashless society, of course, what the controllers, I don't know what euphemisms we want to use going forward, but what they will need, of course, is they'll have to be a form. If we're going to have a cashless society, what we need is a digital currency.
Yes, yeah.
So one way in which they might do that is to try and buy out Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And try and, as I said before, co-opt it in some way.
Yeah, and to some degree there's a bit of an end game with Bitcoin, because there are more that are being released every I can't even remember the timescale of it, but there's a number that are being released, but there's a set amount that will ever be in distribution. So that will eventually end. Now, whether that's something that the actual establishment is aware of, and they're thinking, well, at that point, if it becomes popular enough, we'll just replace it with something that sounds like it. Because that's, again, something that regularly happens.
Yeah, but what I think you're alluding to, Steve, and what our listeners will be picking up on is they just don't know. Because we're in this great age of paradox, aren't we? Where it's this horrible spiritual cliche, so forgive me, listeners, but where the light is getting brighter and the darkness is getting more, you know, darker and darker. And there's this paradox going on, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, and like we said before, the internet is a brilliant double-edged sword for them, because they get so much out of it, but there's so much that they don't control with it. You look at all that they're doing with the social media. The social media appears to be just a massive movement to make privacy something that people don't expect anymore.
Yeah, on the one hand, it's innocent, you know, public putting up pictures of their pets and family and their holiday snaps, when really it's conditioning people to eventually see the idea of privacy as a thing that grandma, you know, and granddad treasured during the wartime. And now it's like, well,
an old-fashioned concept. Yeah.
But as we know, to be a sovereign, free human being, you need to have privacy. If you don't have that, then you're in the gulag. And I think, you know, as we were discussing earlier before making this recording, it's no coincidence that Facebook, you know, the timing when it first, you know, was released online, leading up to the development more of a cashless society. As we know, these things are all carefully timed to create, you know, a certain mindset, if you will.
Yeah, to give them the environment for what they want to develop for our benefit.
Oh, it's always for our benefit, of course. Absolutely.
So that's how they'll always try and sell it to us, is for our benefit.
I wonder now, Steve, if I could just bring it back to some of the things that are happening now that are evidence of a shift towards cashless society. Because some of the research I did, looked at a few articles, was I had no idea, but a few years ago in the States, in the US, they actually moved their food stamp system to something called the Electronic Benefit Transfer, or the EBT.
Yes, they love their acronyms.
They do, yes, to a card-based system. And again, so, you know, you were talking about the homeless.
Yes.
And of course, a lot of people in the States who are under the food stamp system will be homeless themselves.
Yes.
And something else, I did some, as I say, I've been doing some research, found this very interesting article actually, dated the 7th of May from The Independent. And this is from, it's talking mainly about Denmark, so we're on, because you were talking about Scandinavia. Yeah. And it's saying that, the article, as I say, was dated 2015, and it's saying the Danish government has said that as of next year, so that'll now be 2016 now, business such as clothing retailers, restaurants and petrol stations should no longer be legally bound to accept cash payments.
And you listen to things like that and you think, how does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Because why would cash be effectively what they're saying there of no value?
Yeah, yeah. It's again very paradoxical, isn't it?
So they're saying that the whole basis that we have a monetary system on for hundreds of years is of no value anymore. And again, why would that be so important to them to effectively inconvenience a lot of common people?
Sure. Yeah.
And it must be, there must be an end game that...
There's, as we said before, there's a broader agenda that us, the proles, aren't made aware of. I mean, what was interesting again from this article was I never realised, I was assumed that Britain was very much at the forefront of the whole, let's use that horrible phrase, the whole New World globalist agenda.
Yeah.
People know what that kind of means. And it's interesting to actually, countries in Scandinavia, they're more advanced in the movement.
In a lot of cases, and I think we are getting the correct usage of it, conservative with a small c, in this country. There are a lot of individuals that see change as bad. So any change like that has to be very carefully brought in.
Yeah, I think what you're alluding to very skillfully, Steve, is that a few years ago, it's more than a few years ago now, the government had to drop the idea of an ID card scheme, because there was a big movement, and the so-called common people, you know, who were very much ensconced in the mainstream, were saying, no, we're not having this. And they did have to drop it.
Yeah.
And we know they brought it about clandestinely through other means.
Yes.
I do agree there is something in the British mentality,
yeah,
something about us that means that we do question things in some ways a little bit more. Maybe it's our old-fashioned ways or legacy of the wartime, you know, but it's not actually a bad thing.
Yeah, and even down to, okay, now in this country, all your dogs have to be chipped.
Mm.
But there are a lot of people that left it right to the very last minute before they had their dogs chipped, because chipping your dog, is that really necessary? And yet, again, it's sold under the, oh, there's so many good things that it does do if your dog gets lost. You know, they can identify it and they know where to bring it to. If a particular dog is a problem, you can get it identified and dealt with, hopefully appropriately. But again, it's the selling the system to you as something that makes your life better. But really what it does is it gives you control. The near-field communication in credit cards, in phones, in that sort of side of things, it's no different to an RFID chip.
No, and that's scary.
Yeah, and if it's on you, every time you walk into a shop, they know that you're there.
Just to make one more point from this article, again, which was interesting for me, so I'm sure it'll be interesting for yourself and our listeners. I had no idea, but even in the developing world, as it mentions here in this article, in Kenya, cashless payments are growing in popularity in developing countries, as I said, as it removes costs associated with handling cash and lowers the danger of theft or extortion. Kenya's BEBA system, that's B-E-B-A, allows users to transfer money via their mobiles. So again, I was, you know, labouring under the misconception that it's very much a modernist thing, just in, you know, in the West. And here we are, you know, in Africa, in a poor, albeit in Kenya, which is a richer country, as we know in Africa, one of the main countries in Africa. But again, this lends credence to, you know, a lot of research done by David Icke and the whole globalist agenda, that this isn't just about one specific country or collection in the West. This cashless society is about one global currency, the whole world over, not just in the West.
Which you can see then that the model of Bitcoin is a good way for them to go.
Yeah.
And I do wonder how much of Bitcoin was, again, a toe in the water. Let's put something out there. Let's sell it under something else. So it's a bit alternative. It's not controlled by the banks.
And so it had that appeal to people.
Because, again, if you sell it right, then when you change it to what you actually want it to be, people go, well, there wasn't a problem with Bitcoin, really, was there? So why would we have a problem with its replacement?
Yeah.
It's again, a clever way. Yeah, very, very good. And you think in effectively a more developing country, that they are doing transfers via mobile phones. Okay, they've got to have a mobile phone network. There are places where they don't have that, but it just shows how keen they are to get this globally.
And this globalist agenda, you know, you can see why they've made smartphone technology available. You know, we've seen it in countries like Syria when the refugees are coming over to Europe. When they're coming off the boats, there they are with the selfie and the smart, in the most incongruous of circumstances, you know, in certain countries as well, where you wouldn't think they'd have a network, and you think,
they do.
And I've done some research where about Google will be, they're trying to introduce in countries in Africa where they haven't got very good coverage, like a drone or something, where rather than having fixed masts and things like that. So yeah, they're very keen to have that, but not to eradicate poverty.
No, you know? Or hunger.
So that to me is,
or disease.
There's a lot of cost involved in all that, so we can see where the real agenda here is, and that's where it's quite scary. And just lastly, Stephen, for our listeners, the one last thing to say from this interesting article is that, an amusing little anecdote, in 2013, a Swedish bank robber left empty-handed after he found out that the Stockholm bank he had sold up did not carry any cash. And I just had to add for our UK listeners, that's why people, if they do want to perform some criminal activity, shall we say, they go to the local post office.
Yes.
Because that's where people go for their pension and benefit claims. They don't try and knock off the bank, so to speak, because there ain't no cash.
And again, it still comes down to, so the older people, the generation that is used to cash, still wants to do it.
Mm.
So we know that the younger generation see a cashless society as no, well, the majority do, should never pigeonhole that tightly.
No.
The majority see it as no problem.
No.
What is the issue with not having cash? Cash is inconvenient.
Mm. And what you're alluding to, Steve, here is, of course, the generation gap and the different attitudes towards things like technology. And
yes.
Yeah, as whereas the younger generation just see it as, well, of course I, you know, I use my credit card. Of course I use my, you know, smartphone to make payments. It's just what I do.
Yeah, and again, what we've alluded to is the fact that all of this is for them to have better control.
Mm.
And there are a few examples of that. The biggest one that people, most people will have experienced is with your credit card, with the monitoring that they do,
yeah,
which is, of course, for your benefit to make sure you're not having fraudulent
activity. Your transactions, of course. Yeah.
But the actual, there are algorithms that are already written to monitor your spending patterns.
Mm.
And if it sees something out of the ordinary, then they stop your card.
Mm.
And then you have to contact them and say, actually, no, that was genuinely me.
So is that what you're saying, Steve, is to put it in simpleton terms so I can understand?
Yep.
That if you make a transaction that what is, so it's not the amount, is it an unusual purchase?
It can be an unusual purchase. It can be something from somewhere where you wouldn't have, out of your normal pattern.
And they sell it on the basis that, well, where it's for your security because we're just checking.
Yes.
But it's an invasion of your privacy,
yeah,
surely.
So people are sat there, they're looking at what you're buying,
mm,
and they're making, well, and to be fair, they're not. A computer program is making a decision as to whether it thinks it's out of the ordinary or whether it's not.
Mm.
And if they think it's out of the ordinary, it will be flagged up, and then they'll actually put a stop on that card.
Mm.
So if your whole life is based on a cashless system, then they have the control.
Oh, it's complete asymmetric control, and the undesirables that will be known as the homegrown terrorists, you won't even be able to buy food, will you? I mean, literally, you'll be, you know, on the fringes of society.
Yes, and you'll be the ones probably getting the electronic benefit transfers and things like that, because you're no longer properly in the banking system.
No.
Because they've frozen you out. And for people that don't believe that's possible, there's a case in the US. It was a grocery store that the US government thought was actually potentially money laundering.
Mm.
They took all, basically closed down all the credit, took all the funding, everything from that one store. They did it on what they called, and I'll read it here, civil forfeiture.
Right.
So
I love that phrase.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
They can get away with whatever they want to get away with.
And with little or no proof, with little or no evidence, just purely on the basis that the majority of their transactions were less than $10,000, in or out, they considered that that was enough to effectively stop that family from doing anything.
Mm.
Mm. And it was, the onus is on the family to prove that they weren't doing anything.
They had no evidence of criminal activity, but they had to prove that they weren't acting criminally. It's almost like Minority Report.
Yes.
Isn't it?
So that does happen, and it will happen.
More and more.
Yeah, and the more and more control that they've got, if you're doing something that is not popular in their eyes, is not how you should be doing things in their eyes, they'll switch you off. They have that power.
I think that's a good point also that you're making, Steve, is that at the moment, we can record things like this, and there are many people doing, you know, podcasting, blogging, YouTube things that are saying all kinds of things that the establishment and the powers that were, we use that phrase, don't like. At the moment, it's still going out there, but after the next big major attack, if there is one, hopefully there isn't.
The next big crisis.
The next big crisis, whatever it might be, real or not.
Yeah.
They might clamp down on that, you know? So we need to obviously watch for that. And as I've said, you know, on my other podcasts, that's why we need to get it out so we can get it out. And in case they start streaming the internet and all sorts of different things, which we will move on to discuss more in a future episode. Perhaps I think it'd be interesting reaching more towards the end of this episode now, Steve, is look at some ways in which you feel they might introduce go for the final phase of a total cashless society. I mean, some of my ideas are, they were prepping us in terms of, you know, in recent years we've had the idea that, you know, the dollar collapse is imminent, or the euro collapse. We've had, you know, Iran, China and Russia making moves to away from the dollar standard. We, you know, I mean, on the online community, there's a lot of articles to say that, you know, the dollar collapse is imminent.
Yes.
I'm sure you've read it year after year. We hear it, don't we? The dollar collapse is imminent. It never happens.
No.
But how, I mean, do you have an idea of maybe one or two scenarios whereby they could try and bring in the, you know, the last stage of a complete, total cashless society?
Yeah, and effectively what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to make sure they've got everything in place to completely supplant cash.
Yeah.
So as soon as we you know, we look at, like I say, the homeless in Sweden being given card readers, things like that.
That's why I said it's a worrying sight.
Kids actually being given prepaid credit cards instead of given pocket money as they used to be. Mm-hmm. As soon as you go down that road and you start doing all of that, that's the point at which you then have to say that they've got everything in place. So then they have to do something that makes cash so unpopular that it can't be used. Now, there are many, many options they could. I'm sure there was a film recently where effectively the cash was the way that a virus was transferred.
Oh, they could do it, yes, through the actual touching of the paper and
So physically
that would work,
doping something like that.
Yeah.
That would work. It may just be a financial collapse whereby people are unable to get cash out of any bank whatsoever because they stop giving cash out because they're basically saying they don't have the funding.
Yeah, can I just add a point in here, Steve? In terms of the element of cash and banking, is there a role to play, you think, now in the UK? We're virtually at zero interest rates now. So we're getting to the stage whereby literally you're almost going to be paying the bank to keep your money on deposit. I'm thinking, is that part of the agenda somehow?
It could be. It could be that that's a bit more of the push where they're just, again, they're trying to make things, because we are all enslaved to a banking system currently.
Which we'll cover in more detail in future episodes.
So they're trying to make it seem that the banks are doing us a favour all the time in everything that they do. So if you get to the point where, well, the banks aren't making any money because the interest rate is so low, you've got to pay to use the bank unless you go cash free.
That's it. In recent weeks, it's been going through my head thinking there must be a reason other than a deflationary recession or depression, which we've had now since the banking crisis. There's always something else. I thought there's a deeper agenda or conditioning going here. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Or if you want some interest, go digital.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's no different to, well, if you go to a paperless system, then you'll get a small discount on certain utility bills, things like that. This is just the ultimate end of that. If you go to a completely paperless system, a completely cashless system, will give you a benefit.
Yeah.
And again, that's
Pavlovian conditioning, isn't it?
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes. Eat that nice biscuit. And,
yeah, exactly.
And we'll pat you on the head. And And that's how they work it. And it has to be something that they've got in their plans. It's a question of whether there are things that happen outside of their control, because there always are, that would prevent them from being able to do it when they want to do it.
Yeah, because as with everything in life, timing is key. Yes. It's like they may, as you very cleverly said, they strategize for all different outcomes and they have different plans, but they might, you know, they might go too early, they might go too late, or there might be some catastrophe that, you know, they haven't engineered through HAARP. You know, so you know, all is in the mix, really.
There are examples where they appear to have had things backfire. The one that springs to mind mostly is Iceland, which is never makes it into the mainstream news at all about anything. But actually, Iceland is now profitable, but they have a government that is of their own people. They've completely kicked out their original government. They actually arrested all the bankers.
A lot of the bankers, haven't they?
And they actually, in that case, they did actually take all their funds and use that to help actually clear the debt. And they're slowly paying off
which
the debt.
Which is a model that's quite simple, which could be applied across the board. But, of course, you know, there's no way that's going to happen. No. But it is interesting that, you know, that was allowed to happen in Iceland.
And it must be purely because it's a relatively low number of
people. It's tiny, I think it's less than a million, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a tiny population.
So a small group of people could get together and organise well enough and successfully do it with remarkable success.
Because if it was proposed or even muted in any other countries, a lot of heads would be on the block.
An awful lot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right, well, thank you for that, Steve. That was an interesting way of rounding up our discussion today on a cashless society, because it's very much been in my mind, and it must be in the mind of our listeners, because, you know, every day we're making transactions, we're buying things, and, you know, sometimes I'll purchase petrol or gas for our Canadian and US listeners, and I'm sat there and I'm thinking, shall I go to the machine and draw out cash and pay for this, or should I use my credit card? And more in recent years, I thought, no, actually, I'll draw out the cash and pay for it. And what I'm alluding to is, you know, if we want to keep this cash system going,
you've got to use it. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know it's still, they own the cash system. It's a bit weird saying that, but
yeah, but it's a slight offshoot. You go to supermarket, there's loads of them there that they have the checkouts that you do yourself. If you don't use the ones where the people are, eventually they'll all go. You'll have no people there to deal with. You'll be left with a system that, when it goes wrong, as we've said before, technology fails. It does it to err as human, to really get it wrong, takes a computer.
Yeah.
When that gets wrong, gets it wrong, when you have too much money taken from your account, you then in that fight to get it back. So yeah, you're completely right. If you can use cash, then why the hell don't you use cash?
And I would just lastly on this point argue that sometimes when we see failures, small-scale failures in the banking system, whereby, say, a particular bank, all of its transactions, you know, people can't use on that day, or they can't make withdrawals or whatever it is that prepping to see how the public will react?
Is that a test?
I mean, it could be, it couldn't be. Again, yeah. It's,
and again, those people that rely on that, that's the only method that they got. What do they do?
Exactly. Certainly for businesses, you know, I mean, they've got no other option.
No.
Yeah. Right, I think we'll sign off now. It's been great, Steve, to have you on our first new partner on the first episode. It's been very interesting.
It's been very enjoyable, yeah, I must admit. It's gone places I wasn't quite sure it was
going
to go.
Yeah, as always, discerning consciousness always goes off. And the title of our podcast allows us to go off into many different directions. So, yeah, it's been fun. Thank you all for listening in. Just to tell you, please, if you have any comments or suggestions, visit our Discerning Consciousness Facebook page, to mention that word again.
If there's any more information people have, we're keen
to
learn.
You can message us on there. Or if you have any ideas for future episodes, we'd love your input. And also, just to tell you, an area of Steve's interest we will be covering in the next episode, which I know very little about, which I'm really excited learning about, and that is hacking. And we'll be covering some aspects of the anonymous movement as well, which will be really interesting. So I hope you all join us for that one. So signing off now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Emma. Yeah.